With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/AndysGirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/AndysGirls. Sign up today.
You guys, OMFG, breaking news from Andy's Girl Central. Ask and ye shall receive. After only 128 or 9-ish or 7-ish episodes of Andy's Girls, by demand, there is now available for purchase official Andy's Girls merch. What? Oh my God. Craziness. Oh my God. And a free whisper. With every item sold, you have magnets, you have stickers. I think there's a button. There's definitely a mug, t-shirts, hoodies, materials, lusters, so much. I am now, can you believe it? the owner of an international fashion lifestyle brand. My goodness. Link to purchase on the description of this app. OMG. Thank you to Tee Public. So thrilled. I hope you guys love it. So many options. So little time before BravoCon. So make sure to buy your Andy's Girls merch today. Send me a photo. Send me a little, you know, text slide into my DM situation. Yada, internet, OMG. I want to see you guys killing it in Andy's Girls attire at BravoCon, at the office, on date night. Just everyday life. And I hope you enjoy this week's episode of AG, which will be even funnier if you're listening to it while wearing a Andy's Girls hoodie. All right, guys, enjoy. Bye, Steph. I live my life like the shoes in my closet, always a 10.
OC Fashion Week may be fake, but I'm always real. Is that too much shade to OC Fashion Week?
Is there such a thing?
That's the thing, is I don't think it exists. I mean, I know it exists, but like, does it exist?
Does Kathy exist? There's a lot, you guys. I'm already dying. You guys, it's Andy's Girls.
First... What number episode is this?
Because you know I don't know. I think it's...
That was so mean. I'm sorry.
I think it's either because literally right before recording, I was like, I do not know what episode. It's like 128 or 129. It's like, sure, right before 130.
Got it.
You guys, it's AG. I am so excited to be joined by none other than frequent Real Housewife collaborator, light of my life, intelligent soothsayer, other words of which I don't know the meanings, Louis Peitzman. Editor, author, professional best friend of Stassi Schroeder, creator and distributor of the phenomenal biweekly newsletter.
It is biweekly, although that means different things.
I mean,
biweekly means twice a week and every other week. It comes out twice a week.
Oh, yeah. I never know what.
It means both. That's why it's confusing.
It is confusing, but.
I say twice weekly.
Louis Peitzman is never confusing. Co-creator and distributor of I can't do it, you guys. I think I might be high. Of High Drama, the newsletter that comes out twice a week that covers theater, housewives, and horror. Louis Peitzman, I'm going to say your name again for the fourth or tenth time.
I think we're good. I think people get it.
Does it come out? It comes out twice a week.
Twice a week, yeah.
Except
for this week when it came out once. But generally speaking, this is bad timing, but generally speaking, it comes out twice a week.
And I am so excited because the newsletter dives so deeply into things that really, when you think about it, all come back to Bravo. Obviously, The Housewives.
Right.
The horror show, which can concern certain seasons.
Right.
BCC, this season of Dallas. And also just theater.
Right. That's why I called it High Drama, because
it works.
That kind of encompasses all of them. Like, I... Like, theater and horror are my beats when I cover stuff. But Housewives, like, falls into kind of both. It's theatrical. It's horrifying. And it's high drama.
Let me ask you a question. What's your favorite show, just as a viewer, as a Housewives fan? What is your favorite franchise to watch? Just like, you don't think of any kind of like professional whatever, just favorite show to watch. Like, what's your crack?
Housewives show?
Yeah.
New York.
And what's your favorite show to discuss, write about in high drama? Like, to parse apart?
Oh. I don't know. It really depends. I think that there has to be something happening, because yeah. There are shows like New York is one of the franchises where like, it's okay if nothing's happening for me. Like, I always enjoy it anyway, because mm-hmm. I just love them, mm-hmm. but it's hard to write about that.
Yeah.
I just wrote a thing last week about, OC, about, I guess it was earlier this week, but I wrote about the kind of sapphic undertones of the OC.
Oh my God. Louis Peitzman, tell us everything. I'm assuming this is when Bronwyn and
right.
Tamara
this was for,
are...
Yes, this was about, I wrote this earlier in the week, but it was about last week's episode.
Which is probably going to continue for the rest of the season. Who are we kidding?
Right. So I wrote about the fact that, like, you know, we've had a lot of like housewives make out with each other all the time. Like, they love it. They get drunk and they make out, and like, that's great. And some of them in the past have identified as more sexually fluid, but generally it's more like they're drunk and they do it.
Yeah.
Bronwyn claims to be straight, and I don't want to like. She does.
She does. Okay.
She does. She says she has sex with women in the context of threesomes with her husband, but she said that she's straight. However, she appears to be attracted to Tamra on a level that feels real to me and not just like for the cameras. Like, I think it started out as kind of like a fun, like performative flirtation, the way that like a lot of new housewives try to like, you know, give themselves a storyline that yeah. feels fun and fresh. But when she was like drunk and on Tamra, that was very real. Like, I think she's thinks Tamra's hot and she's just like into it.
What do you think about Tamra's, I don't know.
I don't think Tamra's that into it. So I think Tamra likes the attention and like enjoys like, you know, knows that it's good TV, but I think it like went too far for her. And she did say, I didn't see this, but someone told me, because I just did BuzzFeed's morning show, AM to DM.
Oh, and we talked about this. Which is exclusive to Twitter, right?
It is exclusive to Twitter, phenomenal. Yeah. So I returned to my former employer to talk about yes. Housewives. And the host was telling me that Tamra, I guess, had tweeted about how, like, she made it sound non-consensual that, like, Bronwyn, like, jumped on her and kissed her and, like, she didn't know what was happening, which was very weird and gave it a darker feel than what had happened before. But even if you watch the episode, like, Bronwyn's like, I think you're so hot, and Tamara's sort of like, okay. So I think that it's one-sided.
It's hard for me, as someone who is allegedly heterosexual, to watch these shows, and I find myself getting confused because there is like a blurred line between women on these shows expressing their like sexual interests, where it might be real and it might be fluid, and then trying to understand, as someone who's not a member of the LGBTQ community, is this like them doing this for the show isn't an insult to LGBT, you know, if you feel right, like if I it's don't, fake
I, right,
or
I don't I think that it's I think that there is like an unfortunate like sort of this idea that like, you know, straight women like to get drunk and make out with other women, and that it like sort of, you know, that there's a difference between that and like bisexuality or pansexuality. Right. And I don't know. I think it's like I totally understand the concern that it like delegitimizes like
right,
sexual
that's
identity.
That's why I get concerned.
But I also feel like I don't like the rigid structure of like totally. I enjoy a spectrum of sexuality, yeah. and I do believe that you could be someone who identifies as straight, who's also like, hey, I think my girlfriend, assuming you are a woman, I think my girlfriend is like hot and I want to make out with her. Like, I get that. I don't think that like it's there's a difference between like what's happening between Bronwyn and Tamra, which feels like something, and that's why I wrote about it, something real, versus like when God, I remember when that like in New York last season when that woman came up to Sonia to make out with her,
which
and
was
clearly
so weird.
Just wanted to be on camera, completely. You know, and like that's different to me, and that feels more exploitative. But like, I don't know. I was sort of fascinated by the Bronwyn stuff because it felt like it started off as like maybe like for the cameras, and then it became real. Like, I think she's very attracted to Tamra, and Tamra's like very attractive, so I get it.
It's one of her best qualities.
It absolutely is. But in that newsletter, I also wrote about Emily and Gina, because I am feeling some serious queer subtext from the Emily and Gina relationship.
What?
And I've talked to lesbians about this, so I don't think that I'm just imagining it. I think that Emily is like a little in love with Gina. And what's interesting about this is that, like, not to be problematic, but I get gay vibes from Shane. And I get gay vibes from Bronwyn's husband as well. So I'm like, I just have, there's a lot of like subtext happening.
Well, first off, I'm glad you referenced Sean, Mr. Bronwyn, because right. an AG listener tweeted me this week after we'd already confirmed recording today and was like, can you get Lewis Peitzman back on Andy's Girls ASAP so he can talk about Sean Bronwyn's? And I was yeah. like, the
I don't know that I have
magical.
Much to say. I just, I mean, we've talked about this before. He just like seems kind of gay, but also like there are plenty of straight men who are effeminate. I don't think that like, I don't know what it is. I just like, I just, he pings my gaydar for lack of a better term. I he seems gay to me. But, and Shane, I don't know. Shane's just so weird and repressed in so many ways that like, I wouldn't be surprised if he were gay. I don't know. There's something about Shane that's just like, whatever it is, Emily is clearly unfulfilled, right? And like, I just, there's something about the way she talks to Gina that feels very much like when you, if anyone's ever like been too into a friend, like when you have feelings for a friend and you're like jealous they're spending time with other people and you like, you're texting them and you feel a little bit too obsessed with them responding. And like when they don't get back to you, you feel like crushed. And like Emily expressed all of this to Gina and also was like, you're the only person who makes me feel this way. And I'm like, she's in love with Gina.
That is so fascinating to hear and something that completely went way above my head.
Well, I mean, and it could just be like an intense friendship. Like, I get that. Like, lots of friendships are like that. There's just like, I see that and I'm like, Emily has feelings that she doesn't know how to express because she is too like, the way she talks about Gina is like the way you talk about someone you're in love with.
Do you think in her head she's replaced the role and responsibility ideally of a husband and romantic partner with that of a best friend?
Yeah, I think it's complicated. I think that like, you know, everyone like, you know, you have your person and like, I think ideally, like I wouldn't know, but you have like your romantic partner and they're like your person, but you also have like a best friend who fulfills like some that, you know, a different role.
Yeah. But a like, different kind of intimacy.
Right. But, I think that Emily has nothing of value with Shane. And I think that she, you know, even though Gina is like the one who's like a mess and like sort of was relying on Emily for a while, it feels like Emily like really needs Gina to be available to her in like a partner type way. And also like is jealous of Gina having other friends, spending time with women who aren't her. Like she is just like, she's possessive and she's, I don't know, like maybe in love with Gina.
Can I ask you a question? So if we're playing teams, whose side are you on, team Gina or Emily?
I think they're both wrong. Like, I think that they've both this season sort of been wrong. I think that, I think Gina is downplaying how much she has like sort of cut Emily out. I think that she also is like super overreacted to Shane's cousin situation. But I feel like that's what I mean when I feel like that was like more of like there's more subtext there than what we're actually seeing. Like, I think that Gina cut Emily out not because she thought Emily purposely set her up to humiliate her, which like obviously didn't happen, but because she feels an intensity from Emily that she can't handle. Like, Emily wants too much of her time and is jealous, and it makes Gina like uncomfortable and she pushes her away.
Conversely, Gina has mentioned that she feels like Emily hasn't truly understood the pain that Gina is going through and hasn't really been there to support her. Do you think any of that holds validity?
Yeah, I get that too. I mean, I do understand that. I think that like, yeah, it's weird. I don't know. But at the same time, so like I'm sort of on in that fight, I was sort of on Emily's side, but I also feel like Emily does ask too much of her, and Emily is irrationally jealous of the fact that Gina has other friends. And like, Emily's thing with like Tamara and Shannon has always been so weird because like she always acts like they kind of like they treat her poorly and they don't want to be friends with her, but also like she's been horrible to them. And like, she, you know, when she was like saying she, what did she say about Shannon on like a radio show she tweeted about Shannon.
Oh, she said something, I forget.
There was something like nasty about Shannon, and then like the next day she like hung out with them and she was trying to be all nice and was like, why aren't they being nice to me? And it's like, well, you're not like blameless here. Like, you've behaved really poorly, especially to Shannon. So it's weird that like, it's weird that Emily feels like she's sort of bullied when I feel like she's done a lot of that damage herself.
But I feel like in Emily's case, and you know I stan Shan, but I feel like in Emily's case, she's definitely reactive, but she's reactive when something happens to her, where I feel like Tamara has done things to her for inexplicable reasons.
Oh, totally. I mean, Tamara is a monster, and we know this. And like, I think Tamara, what's so interesting this season is I think Tamara is really the one who is like, she's always been like a pot stirrer, but I think that it's so blatant to me this season with Vicky gone, because Tamara is because Tamara is still trying to blame Vicky for things that she is doing. Like, Tamara made the train thing happen. Tamara is the one who brought that up and managed to make it about Vicky spreading rumors about Kelly when that was fully Tamara. Like, Vicky, yes, did her whole thing of like, I know things I shouldn't know. Yes, that was bad. Vicky should not say those things. But Tamara deliberately brought up the train so that it would become a storyline. That was all Tamara. And and it has not gotten called out. I assume that is like a reunion conversation because that storyline kind of passed. But like, it was fascinating how she managed to make it a story about how Vicky and all our talking heads is like, you know, Vicky spreading rumors and like Vicky will never learn. It's like, you said the word, like you said the thing that you and Vicky and Shannon had agreed to not bring up.
Tamara said on either Watch What Happens or what I think was the after show for her show that she said it in a way to say to Vicky, you're intimating something. I'm just going to shut it down by bringing up the specifics on camera, which I have tried to devil's advocate style understand in any way.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. But she's so I really do believe
because she could have just she
knows what she's doing.
They clearly had a conversation about it ahead of time.
Several.
Vicky was not going to say it on camera. I mean, we don't know. Maybe she would have.
Well, Vicky's whole thing is that she makes something sound much worse and much more realistic than it is.
Right.
So she's never going to be explicit. Right. She's always just going to make it into
I mean, I think that the part earlier this season when Vicky talked about like Kelly's not allowed at her daughter's school and explained how she like learned that information, which was probably not true, maybe true, but probably not true, sort of gave a lot of insight into like how Vicky operates, where like I believe that like random people like talk to her and tweet at her or whatever and say like Kelly does coke, and she believes that to be true. Like I think that that's how, or at least believes it to be a valid rumor to spread. Like I think that like seeing how easy it was for her to like hear something from some random stranger and take it as fact sort of shows you why Vicky like constantly finds herself in these like rumor sort of storylines, because I think that she just like hears anything and takes it if it fits her narrative, runs with it.
I agree, and I find myself almost charmed by how awful her reasoning is, in the sense that at one point either this season, or I'm rewatching some recent seasons of OC on Hulu Plus right now. Shout out to Hulu Plus. Completely worth it. And I love it. I'm like obsessed with Hulu.
I do love Hulu.
It's so good. But anyway, so she said at some point, either this season or recently, that I'm going to fuck this up, but it was like something along the lines of like, well, they don't like what I'm saying about them or the rumors that I'm like the things that I'm intimating, but they weren't okay. I wasn't okay with what they said about me during the cancer stuff. And it's like, but what they were saying about you, she's trying to say that they were like shit talking her ex-boyfriend. And it's like, well, of course they were. It was true. And also it is entirely true that Vicky was complicit in that. The level of complicit, we don't really know. But she herself admitted on a reunion after several rounds with Andy that, yeah, there was stuff that she lied about. And now she's trying to walk that back and also
I think Vicky is so fascinating with the Brooke stuff, because I think that she has a let's call it a Trumpian ability to like believe the things she says when they're not true. I think she says things that like enough times that she genuinely believes it. Like I think that she has convinced herself on some level that like even though Brooks was clearly a con artist, like I think she believes that like he was still like the aggrieved party in this. Like she somehow is still like, because she spent so much time saying that, like, they were unfairly attacking him, that now she believes they were unfairly attacking him. She believes she was totally innocent. She believes, like, all of this stuff. And I think that, like, she's someone who, it really is like Trump. Like, anyone can tell her something. And if they sort of, like, appealed to, like, you know, they flatter Vicky and they say, like, you're the best. You're so right about Kelly. Like, by the way, here's a thing that I heard. Like, that becomes fact in her mind. And that's why she feels justified in, like, spreading that stuff, because she thinks it's real. Eddie being gay, like, all of this stuff. It's, like, I think that she, it's not just, like, it's not like Tamara who uses this stuff to, like, cause problems and, like, you know,
Tamara
be vindictive.
Knows that,
Tamara absolutely knows.
She's very smart.
I think Vicky is, like, something is, like, a little bit off with her, and she is able to convince herself of, like, blatant lies that serve her.
What do you think about her alleged demotion?
What do you mean alleged?
I mean, it feels like she's a huge presence on this franchise.
She is, but it's no different than like we have precedent for this, right? Like we have Luann, mm-hmm. we have Portia. Like mm-hmm. there have been housewives who, I mean, Vicky was not in this last episode,
mm-hmm.
so like
she wasn't missed.
No, but I think that like she's an important part of the season. I think mm-hmm. that like my point is that like we have had the friend of role is super variable,
mm-hmm.
and there are like times when a friend of feels like I believe that Carrie Duber is a friend of on Dallas, which is very strange. That's because she's so strange. She's barely been on it.
Barely.
Whereas Vicky is a friend of who, like, is still a housewife. But I think that has to do with the fact that, like, the demotion is more about, like, I think it's punitive on some level. I think it's, like, designed to, like, kind of, like, get housewives to, like, I don't know, to, like, be more in line, like, to do their jobs the way that, like, Vicky was sort of, like, not bringing it in a way that she needed to be a regular housewife, and they wanted to shake things up. But I think that, like, once that happens, and, like, once that sort of, like, pay adjustment is made, which is a lot of what it is like, the difference between being paid by episode versus a salary, then I think it's a matter of, like, how much they want to participate. And I think that Vicky, like, wants to be a full-time housewife.
Completely.
So that is why she's on the show so much. I think that, like, she's not contractually obligated to be as involved as she is. And I also think that, like, if Tamara and Shannon turned on her and were like, we don't want to film with you, she would not be on the show. Because they know they're not required to have her on the show. So I think the fact that she's been on so much this season is just, like, a matter of, like, her desire to be on the show and sort of, like, Tamara's desire to keep Vicky around, because I think Tamara would become the villain more if Vicky weren't there.
I totally hear you. And it's interesting to me when you look at the teaser that they put out for, like, I think they did it last week,
the of mid-season.
Like the mid-season things to come. And Tamara does this thing that annoys the fuck out of me, because I am obviously obsessed with Shannon Bedore, where she lays these little nuggets of, like, well, Shannon did this, and I think it was Shannon. And I wonder if in some ways Tamara is turning, because she knows that Vicky isn't as available this season, and she's now going to try to shift some of the responsibility for ill doings on.
Right, onto Shannon.
Yeah, on her.
I mean,
Lady
Tamara
Bedore
is, like, the least loyal person.
Completely.
That's what I mean about Tamara's sort of, like, villainy this season is that, like, it seems more obvious than ever, and yet she, like, gets away with it consistently. Like, Tamara has never been brought down. She is so good at what she does.
She almost was the Lizzie season. Remember when she ran off
with
her shoes?
I was just gonna say,
and, like, wherever the fuck they were.
You'll never see me again.
Yeah.
Like, yes,
that was as close as we've ever been.
Yes, but she is, like, she manages to, like, she is, like, a producer, like, in her mind.
Yeah.
She sets her storyline.
Yeah.
She creates the drama, and she, like, stands back and watches it play out. Like, there were times when she was more directly involved in the past, you know, when she, like, threw a drink in Gina's face. Like, that was, like, I think also, like, a more emotionally fraught time for her. I think at this point she's, like, relatively stable, aside from the fact that, like, her husband has health problems and her son. Whew. But I think that she, like, yeah, I think that she just kind of, like, is sort of, like, backroom dealing and, like, making things happen without getting her hands dirty. Even though I think to most viewers it's very obvious what she's doing. The women around her don't seem to get it.
So if we're going to talk about all things Tamara, what do you think about Tamara staying on the show? That is the question that really gets a lot of people hot and bothered. Do you think that they should do a refresh next season, and the largest indicator of that refresh is potentially removing Tamara?
I think they would never get rid of Tamara.
Because she's so good at this?
Yeah, because she's, like, an expert housewife. I think she's, like, there's more of an argument to be made for people like Kyle Richards who, like,
well, Kyle's a beta.
Right. That's what I mean. Like, Kyle, they have similar staying power. They manage to, like, but also, like, I mean, Kyle's been brought down several times, mostly by her sister, just being her sister. No, I mean, she,
no,
like,
you're right. You're
like,
right.
She had seasons where, like, she just, like, fell apart because, like, Kim was a mess. But I think that, like, Beverly Hills keeps Kyle around more as, like, a legacy housewife, where, like, it's more important for, like, the brand and the image than it is for, like, creating storylines. Whereas, like, if you take Tamara out of the OC, like, I don't know what happens to the housewives. Like, I don't know, like, I don't think Shannon could stand alone. Shannon is not capable of, like, driving story.
It's weird to me because I have spent the last several seasons of OC essentially shouting for Tamara's dismissal. And I'm watching this season and I'm finding myself in a place where I'm like, I might dislike the way that she behaves, but I do think structurally right now I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think we're in a pretty solid place with OC, judging from the last six episodes.
Right.
And it feels like, regardless of how I feel about her personally, she's doing a pretty good job. And right. maybe I want her to stay at least right now so I can continue to dislike aspects of her, like character. Right. But it doesn't feel like before it felt like, you know, last season it felt so tired and I was over it. And I'm like, this needs to be shaken up or something needs to be happen as something needs to happen. And right now I'm like, I don't know. I'm happy with the shows. I look forward to watching OC in a way that I have not in a long time. And she might be responsible for some of that, even if I'm not like Team Tam, which is a club that I do not know, you know, exists. But she's yeah, doing
I don't love this season. I like the season. I think it's a lot stronger than it has been. I think that
which is again a very low bar. Had
it, the episode where they went to the
phenomenal
retreat.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Was one of the best Housewives episodes ever, and it was like such a return to form. I've never liked Tamra, but I also like don't think the show can survive without her, and I don't even love her as a villain because I think she's so obvious about it. I just think that she's like an effective plot device, basically. Like, she needs to be there. So I've never like rooted for her to stay on the show. I think that she has some great moments, but I mostly just think that she's there because she's driving everything. And because there's no one else who fills that role of like,
yeah,
she's both like she kind of tries to be a voice of reason, mm-hmm. and have these sort of like more grounded storylines about like her family and her business and whatever and like God and fitness. No, I mean, it's she's no, like had right. these you're very right. like kind of yeah. like basic storylines. Mm-hmm. But she also like is such an instigator of drama in a way that like Kelly is too unstable to be that person, because you can't like Kelly is so all over the place that like you can't allow a Kelly to be the lead of the show.
Lightning in a bottle.
Shannon is so fragile and like, you know, like these are people who like are great for like these crazy storylines, and like they will definitely give you like the scenes you need, but they're not going to like, they're not stable enough to guide things. Yeah. To anchor things. So I think that like, you need someone who's like this like Machiavellian, like, you know, professional housewife, who also like knows what she's doing and isn't just kind of like creating drama because she's drunk and unwell.
And there are some women that when they, as they remain on Housewives or when they join, I look at them as a person and I think to myself, how on earth have you not been on TV for this long in your life?
Right.
Like there are people, Leanne is one of them. Bethany is one of them. And I would put Tamra in that bucket where it doesn't mean you're A++. It doesn't mean, obviously, it doesn't mean you're a good person. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that it seems like you have so many gifts and talents that are so specific to Housewives that it is fascinating to me. And maybe nothing else.
But I mean, like this, Bethany, but they are a great business person.
Sure, but they are so uniquely qualified to be on this specific kind of franchise that it's almost, it's like unbelievable to me that until this point, Leanne has not existed on right. any well, kind of reality.
Well, that's how I feel about Stassi. I mean, she was on
totally
several reality shows, but Stassi was like born for reality television.
Completely.
And like, it's a little different because like, I don't think Vanderpump Rules drama functions the same way as Housewives drama. Mm-hmm. Like it's a little bit more, it's actually kind of more organic in a lot of ways. But I think that like Stassi is one of those people where you're like, you could not have found a better job. Like this is exactly what you should be doing.
So speaking of people who may or may not be born to do this kind of work, right. what do you think about Bronwyn?
I am not a Bronwyn fan.
Why?
I don't think she's good at this. I think she's been...
You don't?
I think she's been very... She's trying very hard and it shows. I think that she is not cut out for this, as evidenced by the fact that she cries whenever she is like confronted by anything. I think that she wanted to like walk onto this show, which she clearly did her research on, as all new housewives should.
Right.
And it's I think that she, I don't know. I just, something about her that feels very phony and not in a fun way. I will say that like, I really enjoyed her in the last episode because I felt like when like that, like that's the real Bronwyn when she like lost her mind. I was like, yeah, that I'll watch. Like that is like fun. But like Bronwyn, like creating these storylines of like husband sexy time or like family photo shoot, I'm like, I just don't give a shit. And I find her really grating a lot of the time. And I also like sort of hate. I've like grown really tired of the like quirky mom thing. I just think it's become like a housewife's trope where I'm like, I don't know. Like it bothers me. Like I think it's just so obvious. Like Lydia's mom was like, you know, was that role. I think that like there are some exceptions. Like Rinna's mom, I love.
Ugh.
But Lois like is not so much a quirky mom type as just like a fun, like she's like a grounded matriarch type who like comes in and is just like fascinating and like charming, and looks amazing for her age. But yeah, I don't know. I don't love that Bronwyn's mom is like something I have to deal with.
Well, I talked about this on AG, I think last week with Damien, which is I have been rewatching recent OC. And I found myself looking at Lydia and Judy's dynamic and comparing them to Bronwyn and Dr. Debs in the sense that I found Judy to be operating from a more like real organic place, right, where for whatever reason she's like shutting out the world and lives in a world of sparkles, but it felt very nurturing and positive. And then I found myself, this is before obviously this past week, looking at Dr. Deb and thinking like she seems like a dark spirit. Like I don't believe the crazy animated hair. I feel like she is, there's something off about her and it's not in a good way. And then we watched this week's episode and I feel like that kind of played out. And the real moment with Bronwyn where she's like angrily, you know, defending her family or losing her shit. Yeah, I agree. That's probably a real thing. And also has a huge role in her talking about her fractured childhood where she's now trying to defend her family. But like her family, meaning her relationship with her mom, is probably pretty fucked up.
Right.
Bronwyn herself went on Watch What Happens this week and talked about the fact that like they're not communicating right now and have unfollowed each other on social media.
Her mom.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I do think that like the other thing about her mom versus like Lydia's mom felt like a personality who was like, you know, ready for the camera, but I don't think that she was doing that for TV.
Yeah, ditto.
But I think that Bronwyn's mom wants to be on TV.
100%.
I think that she is like her like kind of like cool rocker past and all that stuff has been like very much like that is a persona. Not that it's not real on some level, but like that is like for the cameras. And I and the combination of that and Bronwyn's very like affected personality, like I find it draining. I don't like that.
Not to mention or totally believe in woman of the people, Heather Dubrow. But Heather Dubrow said on her podcast recently that she was on a flight and a woman came up to her and was like trying to talk to her. And Heather was like, hey, how are you? And the woman was angry that Heather didn't recognize her and apparently tagged her in social media in some Insta stories. And that woman was Dr. Deb. That Dr. Deb went up to her on a flight and was like, hey, how are you? And they were she was trying to like kiki with a fellow Bravo Leb. And Heather, who has said that she hasn't watched this show since she left, or at least right, isn't watching this season, was like, I don't know who the fuck you are. And then Dr. Deb tried to like publicly shame her on IG, which felt strange to me, although I believe that Heather is like cool in real life, like not in a positive way, that she comes off as like a little cold. That's right, just her natural personality. But I 1000% believe that this was the fault of Dr. Deb.
Oh, absolutely.
Who is really reaching with her 15 minutes of fame and has come under the hot seat this week because of that interaction at the world-renowned OC fashion show held right,
the very real OC fashion week show.
I mean, yeah, they got the yacht is all I can say to them. And that yacht is like a nighttime boat on a whatever. But Dr. Deb had this interaction with a gentleman that she said was security. I don't know if that's the role he played. And a lot of viewers were up in arms, not only about how the interaction played out.
Because it seems super racist.
Because it seems super racist. And also about the audio. Because this gentleman, you know, Kathy, you know, new woman of the people, has said a lot of stuff on Insta about how, like, Bronwyn's shaming her company or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But this guy has said on social that Dr. Deb maybe used like the worst possible word that really, you can ever use. He said obviously
he used the N word.
Yeah. He like typed it out, which he is a black person. He has like every, right. we don't even like using the word, you know, like I just,
right.
but he says that she used the word and he says that Bravo edited it out. Now there is a line in the episode where she says, I'm going to fuck up the line. I'm sorry guys. But she's like that big pause security guard. Now I don't know if he's referencing that line and is saying that she used that word in that line. That seems, from an editing perspective, I think that she was having like a white privilege racist moment and wanted to say like that big black security guard and stopped herself, or her breathing was right. strange at that moment. However, if this person is saying that she used the word, I have no choice but to believe him. Now, did Bravo purposefully edit that out? I don't know if it was caught. I feel like some version of that would have been used in the episode.
I don't know.
I think it's a question.
I can see Bravo cutting that, because the shitstorm it would cause for them, like, would the demand to have like Brahman and her mom off the show if that happened would be instant, versus like I'm trying to think of like racist moments on past Housewives shows, of which there have been many, but like,
oh my God, there have been. Why can't I think of any right now?
Well, I mean, so I remember when I've watched Melbourne, like Melbourne's crazy. Melbourne's on a Bravo show, but Real Housewives of Melbourne, like,
did Gina say something? What happened?
It's had a ton of racist. There was a whole thing where
Chica maybe.
They've all said racist stuff. They're all. I mean, Lydia's been casually racist like many times, and like,
Petty Fleur. That's probably.
They've all said stuff, and it was like, I believe it was Gina accusing another house, if I can't remember which one it was, of calling her a racist slur.
Maybe Lydia.
No.
Okay.
It was a new house that she was fighting with. And it was very complicated because generally speaking, I would always believe the person accusing that, but it came out of nowhere and was clearly, it was all very fishy, and it was like, it didn't really make sense. But because she is a dark-skinned Italian woman. And it was complicated. But the point is, like, I think that was different because, like, Arena has different standards than Bravo. Like, I think that Australian TV can show that differently. And another Australian, was it Sydney, had an N-word controversy?
I think it was Sydney. Oh, yeah, wasn't it canceled as a result?
Yes, but I think that, like, I just think that, like, that's... But I think in the U.S. especially would cause such a huge reaction, and I don't know. I don't think Bravo would want to wade into that. I think that it would like lead to Brahman's dismissal. How could it not? How could you, like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
if she's alienated her mother from having a relationship right now, I think you cut the fat immediately. I think she would say that is completely inappropriate and super racist, and she turns all the attention against her mother, who's not a full-time housewife.
Right.
And then you just
silence. We'll see what happens at the reunion if this comes up. But I just think that, like, there's something, I don't know. I can see Bravo just not wanting to deal with it at all. Because I'm trying to think of other examples
of,
like,
that is insane to me.
I mean, we don't know for sure. But I don't know. I'm trying to think of other examples of, like,
I can't think of any right now for some reason. I know that there have been, and I mean, obviously we're looking at,
like,
one
a lot of, like, casual
on
racism and microaggressions all of these shows
and homophobia and everything.
Yes, and like, but I'm thinking of like intensely racist moments, and obviously we'll get into Dallas in a moment, but like that's coming up. But I just like, that's really, I hadn't seen that or heard that, but, like, watching it, it felt racist because, like, her reaction was so out of line to the situation, and the guy who, like, stopped her was also, like, super apologetic and, like, professional about it to the extent that, like, it wasn't clear how and why it escalated that much, except for the fact that, like, Kelly walked over and, like, was Kelly. But it was so, like, the whole thing was, like, so disproportionate to what happened.
I felt like, ultimately, the responsibility for creating the dynamic that we saw on the show was absolutely Dr. Deb, followed by Bronwyn, marching over to an event organizer and starting the conversation by saying, you owe my mother an apology. Obviously, Kathy is a special character in this world.
Right.
And turning on a microphone was insane. But ultimately,
her passive aggressive speech about was
hashtag
incredible
anti-bullying was honestly, I watched that scene a couple times because I was in denial that it happened, because I'm like, this is so unbelievably entertaining. And it was, it just felt like so crazy. And then Bronwyn said on Watch What Happens, she's like, I didn't know in the moment if Kathy was playing this for TV, but then I realized, like, no, she actually is this crazy. But like, they were all beginning at an 11. I absolutely believe that this started from a white privilege racist place in how Dr. Deb behaved. Right. I also have to say that my 9-to-5 day job is as an event producer. And just to say, I have had moments of high level individuals speaking or behaving to me in a way that could be considered inappropriate.
Right.
And you know what you do when you're like an actual person working in this job in high stress environments is you take it. Because
that's,
you're
but,
in
that, but that's what the security guy did. He was very much like,
I think I'm just going to say,
you think Kathy should have been like,
I don't think you should ever touch an attendee in any way. I think he did it instinctively. I think he saw somebody walking in an area and I'm like going to, with your permission, touch your hand. I think that he was like, but he did it with her arm and she felt so high and mighty and bothered that she's like, sure. And that she was like, oh my God, you're touching me. And she made it into a thing that it didn't need to happen. And then he was like trying to explain herself and she would have no, and then she elevated it by essentially intimating that she was somehow truly mishandled physically and otherwise, and said that Kathy whatever, but and like the who are you sweetheart, I'm nobody's sweetheart, blah blah blah. It was too much from the start, and it right. wasn't helped by the fact that none of these people are actually event professionals. These are people who, like her, this woman Kathy, it seems like her hobby is putting on boat shows or whatever. Like none right. of this was happening
if
in the real
OC
world.
Fashion Week were real, it would be a different story.
Amen. But I do think that I have had experiences with people who started at 12.
I know what you mean.
But your reaction right. is no, to no, just no. like meet, just calm, diffuse, whatever. And it wasn't helped by the fact that Kathy is in herself a character. Obviously, ultimately, this was like a nothing burger that became a 5-course meal. But it was also super entertaining.
No, I think that Kathy, like, if I were the Kathy in the situation, you'd be like, I'm so sorry, like, and just yeah. let Bronwyn be crazy.
And Bronwyn shouldn't, if Bronwyn gave a shit about making sure that the night was about her kids, she absolutely would not have gone up to Kathy in the moment, especially if, as she said, their kids like went to school together. Her mother was not aggressed. Her mother was not assaulted. Her mom was truly not mistreated. But even if she thought, no, she knows her mother, okay? This is probably not the first time that her mother, sweet, loving TLC woman that she is with her rainbow-colored hair, has felt like she was the victim in some situation. And if I was her, knowing that her kid's fashion show was like the next one up, I probably would have said to myself, I totally hear you. I'm so sorry this happened. Let's focus on the kids and we'll deal with it after, because right. she knew in the moment that it wasn't a 911. If it had been a 911, she would have handled it after. I wouldn't have judged her as much. But she went up to Kathy and as Dr. Deb handled it inappropriately. This guy instinctively, if he did put his hands on her, which he said he didn't, it was, I don't think it was in any way malicious. I think he was more saying like, who are you?
Right.
And why are you in an area that you're not allowed to be in? His, you know, Dr. Deb mishandled it. Bronwyn mishandled it. Kathy mishandled it. Kelly was there. You know, like, it was just a recipe for disaster, of which I'm super appreciative. Do I think that her mom, I think that her mom started it off on a really poor note, coming from a place of total white privilege. And that's where we are today.
You just call it racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, yes. And I think, you know, knowing, having more context for it just makes it worse. And I think that, I hope that with Bronwyn and her mom being estranged, we find out
more.
It's really, like, fascinating. Like, I mean, a lot of housewives and people who do these shows, like, try to downplay it. But, like, filming like this can absolutely destroy relationships. Like, I don't think that Bronwyn and her mom had a great relationship ahead of, like,
completely
before filming for a variety of reasons. But I think that, like, this definitely exposed some shit. And, like, there's a reason they're not talking, and it's because they did the show together.
Yeah, because you can't ignore these huge fractures, especially when you're addressing them or not on national
TV.
Right. It's so interesting to me that Emily has doubled down in her relationship with Shane, which says a lot about Emily's psyche,
right?
Knowing the reaction that she has seen by viewers.
I do think that it's going to be interesting in the reunion to talk about Shane, because I think that, like, when you're in it, you don't know how bad it looks. You don't know how it's being edited. Like, I think that, like, when she's, when, like, I can't imagine her watching it now and, like, still being, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure it looks terrible.
And yet on Watch What Happens, she almost laughs off the idea that they're getting divorced, which I believe is a real reaction. And I watched that scene of her going fucking horseback riding, whatever the fuck, which was so random. I was very into it, with Bronwyn, where she's saying, "I'm so glad I picked such a great dad," which I was like, is he? Wow, that's news. I haven't seen a single moment of that.
That was very weird too.
Phenomenal. Like, and then she's saying, like, "I'm so proud of myself for picking such a good dad, and so proud of myself for sacrificing my own happiness, because I don't deserve to have a great husband as much as my kids deserve to have a great father."
People forget their quote unquote courtship and how weird it was.
Yeah.
Like, people forget the origin story of their relationship, which is that they did not date. They were, like, coworkers and, like, kind of friends. And then he asked her to marry him.
Over, like, G-Chat or whatever existed at that thing.
It is not, like, there's no love there. Like, whatever love there is maybe, like, came after the fact. But she explained, like, in her first season that they, like, basically got married because they felt like they should. And once you know that and know that it wasn't, like, you know, they didn't date for a long time and fall in love and get married, like, it explains a lot about where they're at now to me.
It also feels like she will only ever come from this place of pain because she's in a loveless marriage until she makes a change, which it sounds like she's perfectly happy not to ever do.
She's very, I mean, it's
not perfectly happy, but she doesn't feel like that's something that she deserves.
I mean, she's so similar to Gina in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, it's such an easy comparison because, like, she's, like, the brunette who's, like, you know, the curvier one who everyone sort of, like, treats differently. She's not this, like, skinny blonde in the OC, but also, like, this sort of, like, low self-esteem, awful husband treating you like garbage on camera and, like, taking it. And, like, it's just, like, she reminds me of her so much. And, like, you know, Gina had that moment of awakening and, like, in the sense that she, like,
I'm giving Lewis eyes.
Well, she left her husband. And she, no?
I mean, I think that Gina sees the reality of it, but I think that Gina is having a very distorted vision of what she's experiencing as we are watching this in the moment. I think the Gina of, like, literally right now.
I'm talking about Gina Keough.
Oh, what? Oh my God. I thought you were talking about Gina. I was like,
I should have, let's backtrack.
Wait, say it again.
I'm saying that Emily is the Gina Keough of this.
Completely.
And can everyone who was confused by the last, like, 2 minutes, like, replay this with the idea that, like...
Rewind.
I am saying that Emily is the Gina Keough and that she is the curvy brunette who doesn't fit in.
Oh, that makes so much...
She's not fit in with the OC. She is ostracized and treated poorly. She has an awful husband. And so... And I was saying I have some hope because Gina Keough, like, left, was like, everyone treating me like garbage. And, like,
P.S. does Matt still live with her, with Gina Keough, her husband? Isn't his name Matt?
Is his name also Matt?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
That's
actually
really confusing.
I think he does still live with her. I think she made peace with the fact that they weren't, like, technically husband. Eventually leave it, if not
right,
literally.
Right, and she dated other people. I mean, whatever it is, like, I just feel like she had an awakening.
Yeah.
No, G-I-N-A Gina has not had the awakening she needs yet. And by the way, your estranged husband showing up in your home terrifying. And we know that played out very badly. So,
yeah, the end result of that is now really she's in a tough spot. And it was so upsetting to me, but I felt for her because she's deluded in her thinking, but her delusions are so embedded in so many different people's, like, DNAs, especially women, where she is like, it was so awful, it was so terrible, but he cares about me so much.
Right.
And that was, like, that got to the heart of me because I haven't been in a kind of situation that we've all been in, like, crazy situations with people where you put up with too much and you misinterpret abuse in some way, emotional or other, or manipulation, and you think that that's right. care. And she thinks that him showing up, even though he's not in any way apparently saying, I'm going to stop fucking that woman that I was cheating on with you, but he's saying, I'm going to get a job in the OC and I want to blah, 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 and I don't like you dating neurosurgeons or whatever the fuck else. Like, the fact that he was in her bedroom, in her home at 1 a.m. and we're pretending that this is in any way
romantic
is so scary to me. Also because we have the benefit, for lack of a better term, of knowing that he is like an abuser. He is right. a horrible, abusive person who's been emotionally deeply manipulative to her. And now we know, because of court documents essentially, that he has been physically abusive to right. her. So it's just, it's
upsetting.
It's upsetting. And it's also not abnormal for people to kind of have that thinking, even though it's super distorted.
Right.
I mean, I was happy, not happy, that's a bad term. I was grateful that it was on camera, because I think this is something that could come up and be a really healthy discussion if she's able legally to talk about this, because I don't even know what that's like. And B, if other women can sort of join in and saying, like, this is not what love right, is. This right. is something that's very scary and very dark. Can we turn to
Speaking
other?
Of scary and dark.
So, oh my God. Listen. First off, I lost my shit on social media last night about a situation that happened in New York. And I don't know why I'm talking about this. It sort of reminds me of Dallas, of like Harvey Weinstein was invited to a actor showcase that he's been invited to before by private invitation. And some women who were attending, some of which have said that they are survivors of sexual abuse or sexual violence, called out his attendance at this event that literally happened 2 nights ago. And the organization, the bartenders at the club, the patrons, everyone booed them for saying, like, why is a serial rapist here? And I genuinely don't even know why I'm talking about this, except to say that it felt like such an obviously bad move that these venues have been trying to like pivot and say that, oh, it was, you know, why am I talking about this?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I think it maybe,
I mean, it was horrible. And I've been like, the women were kicked out and it was like, it was awful.
Maybe it's like a warped, it's like the sense that you don't ever know. Maybe I'm thinking about it a little bit because of OC, and then we'll pivot to Dallas. A little bit in the sense that, like, there is no bubble, there is no safe space. Mm. And that comes out in different ways on reality TV and in real life. And in New York City, the joke is that we live in this bubble, and God bless, because this is our safe space where we're surrounded by people that many people that live and think like us. And it's like, no, we don't. This kind of misogyny or feeling that we need to protect the abusers and by doing that, like, shame people who speak out comes up again and again. And on Housewives, there are little pockets of these dark moments where we see things that kind of bring that darkness into light.
Yeah.
And I think watching Gina and Matt's story, Gina with a G, new Gina, watching that story play out on OC and probably watching how she handles it on the reunion is bringing out this like dark thinking that a lot of people who are survivors think, where they misinterpret acts of manipulation as caring. And on Dallas this week, we can talk about the episode because it's rife with conversation, probably the first solid episode that Dallas has had this season. But I have been very distracted after watching the upcoming on the second half of Dallas by watching how people have responded to what looks like a huge plot concerning something that Leanne says and figuring out whether or not that is racist. Now, I was triggered, not like in a like actual trigger way, but like just pissed about the fact that we're pretending we give a shit about whether or not her castmates consider Leanne to be racist because of a comment she makes about Carrie with a K, knowing that the vast majority of these people voted for Trump. So I'm like,
right. It's wild because like one of the first things that Trump did when he announced the presidency was make a racist comment about Mexicans. So for suddenly there to be concern about Leanne calling a castmate a Mexican, which is not a slur.
It's all about how you intend it.
It is about intention. I need to see more of that because, like, it certainly sounded bad, but it didn't sound... I don't know. It's confusing. She wasn't... She didn't... Yeah, I need to see more of that. I'm not excusing Leanne's behavior at all. Yeah. I just want to see... I want to see more context. You need to see the
episode. Yeah.
Or several episodes or whatever it is.
But it also just was funny to me in light of...
There is some serious cognitive dissonance happening.
And... It's just funny because it's a conversation that I don't know that Bravo is going. I don't think Bravo is going to put the pieces of that together. I don't think that's something that's going to come out.
The viewers certainly already are.
Definitely. But I don't know that for their narrative, they find it beneficial to get into these women's like voting records in a way that they right. have on New York and other and OC back in the day.
And back in the day. But we, like season we talked one. About this. They definitely, I mean, Bravo, they show more of the politics of the housewives when they are liberal.
Yeah.
So on Atlanta and New York, we see more of it totally. Than we do on OC and Dallas.
Yeah. And Jersey.
Even though there are a lot of conservative viewers of these shows, I think that like Bravo itself knows that its audience is largely gay men and women and people of color. And I think that they... I mean, I know that it's more...
I'm giving him eyes.
Well, no, I mean, I think that, like, there. What is the most popular Housewives show? Is it not Atlanta?
Oh, my God. You know what? An AG listener sent me all the stats, and I've already forgotten. I'm so sorry.
I think Atlanta is the most has the best ratings.
He sent it to me, and I forget. I feel like Beverly Hills is actually ranked really high up there. I think that we keep saying it's Atlanta. It might be Atlanta, but I know that Beverly Hills is pretty high up there.
I just think, for example, that black women are yeah. like a huge part of, yeah, yeah, yeah. Of Bravo's viewership.
And totally.
So yes, I think that like I don't know. I think that they're less concerned about alienating conservative viewers than alienating liberal viewers.
I would say almost the reverse, noting that during the election cycle, something that Andy has acknowledged, when he would do poll after poll of who's going to win.
I don't think that's like...
I think there's a huge conservative base that watches and a huge...
I'm not arguing against it. I'm saying that Bravo is like less concerned with alienating those conservative viewers than they are with their liberal viewers. Otherwise, they would definitely have more of the housewives talking about their republicanism. There's a reason why the shows that get political are the liberal ones. Like, you had the Atlanta Housewives, like, going to D.C. and talking about Black Lives Matter.
Right.
You don't have people on OC. I mean, we do this season have a storyline about, you know, Trump. But, like, generally speaking, we don't have, like, the OC Housewives talking about how they want to build the wall. Like, we don't have, like, the Dallas Housewives. We don't have Deandra talking about her, you know...
But I think a lot of that is the housewives themselves not wanting to be critiqued for their political leanings.
Right. And I think that's because they know that a lot of their you know, their supporters, because they want to be in the pride parade and they want to like, you know what I mean? Like they want to.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that
they consider their fans to largely be left leaning, even though I agree with you that it is more complicated than that. And I also think those polls that Watch What Happens Live did, like, are not entirely reflective of anything. I think a lot of people who watched that were probably like, I don't feel the need to vote in this. Like, I don't think that it's like, you know what I mean? Like, consider the fact that, like, during that 2016 election, like, we all thought that Hillary was going to win. And I can very easily see someone, like, watching Watch What Happens Live being like, you know, I'm one of the many liberal viewers of this show. I'm not going to call in and vote for, like, you know, Hillary and then, you know, Trump is...
I feel like there's a much larger conservative base of talk about me living in a bubble.
But I don't think we disagree on this. Oh, okay. I think it's like
it's just how Bravo handles it.
I'm saying that like I don't think the polls really mean anything, and I don't think that like I don't entirely believe it's a 50-50 split. The majority of the country also is liberal, as we know. The majority of the country is not a Trump supporters are not the majority in the country by any means.
But it's a lot closer than what we think in many ways. I think there are a lot of silent Trumpers.
It's like 40% of the country.
Okay. Is it?
Yes.
That's a large percentage.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I watched the trailer for
Hillary
this.
Got 3 million more votes. Let's
oh,
just,
I know
like,
that.
I'm just saying, like, it's not like I
make America good Dallas again.
And I don't. And I just don't feel like. I also think that there's a lot to unpack here, but I just don't feel like it's as like evenly split as you think it is. But I'm also acknowledging there are certainly more, and I see it in my at replies, and I see it in people talking about Bravo shows. Like, there are plenty of conservative viewers of these shows.
Yeah, completely.
But I think that, like, you know, it's interesting. I think what's happening on the OC is really on Real Housewives OC is really interesting, because there is this sort of pivot to, like, Tamara coming out against Trump in a way that feels very never Trump Republican, where, like, she's not saying anything about his policies, really. She's like, he's like boorish and talks about women poorly and all this stuff, like, you know, so she can kind of like pivot away. And I think also, like, what a lot of the housewives are probably seeing is, like, maybe they feel like he's going down and they don't want to be known as, like, having been Trump supporters, and they want to, like, kind of acknowledge they don't like him without saying that they're, like, voting for a Democrat.
I think that they don't want to alienate their fan base, which I don't begrudge right. them for. I think that's a strategic decision. And I think for Tamara, she's doing exactly what you're saying, which is acknowledging that he might personally be a piece of shit, but she's not saying I didn't vote for him. Right. I would not be surprised if it turns out she had.
I would not be surprised if she didn't vote at all, but that's a
other conversation. Right. And with Dallas, I just found it fascinating that we're supposed to believe that these women care whether or not Leanne is racist, noting that so many of them support a policy.
Well, it's about optics, right? Like, yeah. It's about, like, I'm sorry, but, like, a lot of them, I'm sure, have private thoughts and feelings and voting records that indicate that they don't super care about this sort of thing. But I think that they don't want to be associated with a woman, you know, using racist language. They don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, they have to call it out. Like, so.
But how much of it is them calling it out because they give a shit, and how much of it is them trying to bring down Leanne?
Oh, I think it can be both. We have to see how the conversation, like, plays out.
Yeah, I need
out
to see, because, the episode. Like,
I'm confused because, like, saying that, like, it's all about tone, right? Because, like, describing someone who is Mexican as Mexican is not inherently offensive, but it's. And I don't think even, like, I don't know exactly what Leanne's sort of, like, implying with that. But the fact that she brought it up to begin with is, like, not a great sign.
Yeah, I think she was saying it in the moment because her gut instinct was, how can I make fun of this person or speak of her in a negative way? And she decided to bring up this woman's nationality, and you put the word chirpy in front of it. She wasn't saying it as a term of endearment. I can't think of someone saying, there's no comparison to me because I can't think of another example. The point of this is, like, what was her intention? And the fact that in the rest of the, I mean, I'm fascinated to watch this play out, but, like, in the rest of the season, you can see the wheels turning in Leanne's head when they're showing other scenes where she's like, well, I meant her to be this, and I meant, when I said Mexican, I meant that she was being, like, emotional or something. It's not gonna end well for Leanne. She's trying to figure out how she can redefine her intention, but it doesn't seem to be playing out successfully from the small amount of footage that we saw in that trailer.
Right.
And it's fascinating to me.
I have this hope that it will, and it won't happen. I mean, I find it hard to believe, but I hope someone calls in to watch What Happens Live, or it happens at the reunion, that Deandra gets called on her bullshit, because I just, like, I'm sorry, but, like, she's not only a Trump voter, she is, like, a Trump fundraiser who did it during the 2016 election while he had said those comments about Mexicans. So I really am not here for, like, Deandra being at all a voice of reason when it comes to, like, Leanne's anti-Mexican racism.
And the strange thing to me is that Deandra has explicitly said that she didn't play any part in supporting him. But when you Google it, she was on the, like, Texas for Trump. She was, like, a chairwoman of something. Like, it doesn't, it's very weird to me.
Yeah.
But on a completely different note, let's get off politics, because I really broke my brain yesterday when I found out about that New York thing and said a lot of stuff.
No, it's fine.
So listen, a lot happened on Dallas this week.
I mean, for the first
time this season. What are your thoughts?
You say that, but I didn't feel like this episode was any different than it's sad because Dallas was, like, the show that I was, like, telling everyone to watch that was underrated. And now I'm just super bored. And I think that I've talked to a lot of other people. It's just like, it's not good this season. I think that losing Carrie Duber was a mistake. I think that she's not a Tamrick. She's not as good at that, but she definitely like fills the role of like voice of reason slash shit stirrer. Like she definitely has that sort of like, I'm going to be like the grounded one, but also by the way, I will be like dropping little like seeds of like drama everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. She's already doing that in her brief appearances this season, but like, yeah, I think losing her was a mistake. New Carrie, I don't really know what to make of her yet. I think that like she and Bronwyn, like, I don't know. I almost feel like it works better when people start as friends of housewives first. I feel like it's very, I always have a hard time when like we get these new housewives and we're thrown into their lives where like we get a lot of storylines about them right away and about their family and about everything. And like, I haven't had time to warm up to them yet. So it's hard for me to like, I don't know if you feel that way about new housewives, but I feel like that's a lot of the problem is that like when they're brought on, not as like a friend of, when they just like immediately are given these sort of like prime storylines, it's tough to like get it to be into it.
Yeah. Well, I have to feel like there's some chemistry there first. And sometimes right. It comes from having an actual real world connection. And sometimes it comes from that person just being meant to be on this show.
Right. I think with Kelly Dodd, it was just like, you know, she was just like right away, like in the fray.
Explosive.
And was such a, like a character that it mm-hmm. worked. With people like Carrie and Bronwyn, I know maybe we disagree on Bronwyn, but I just like don't feel like, and another part of the problem is that like there's not that much happening on Dallas. And so like we have more storylines about like Carrie and her husband, which like I could care less about, you know what I mean? Like, or like her kids or whatever it is, like we're getting more of her and her like family life because there isn't anything else happening to talk about.
I mean, that was the one moment where I was like, oh, that's interesting just to note that Eduardo or whatever, like, doesn't want to give her any kind of collateral, which doesn't seem to be a great indicator. But I do not give a single shit about Carrie with a K. And I also feel like this franchise is way too young to feel this tired. And yeah. If you want to watch this season, just watch last season a second time where you will see it done and produced at a much better level. And it, because... You know, I always forget the rating stuff. I really am not good at that. That's like something I just genuinely don't care enough to research. But I love when you guys...
Dallas was not a high ratings
show. No, it never was. And I love when you guys send me stats.
And I have seen the season is not doing well. It is right. Like low.
It's not in a position where it can be doing this poorly artistically because you're losing the people who would tell their friends to watch this show.
Right.
Like it was struggling last season and we were like, you got to watch it. You got to watch it. You got to watch it. And this season they're in a place where I would think it would put you a little bit in jeopardy. Now I don't work at Bravo HQ, so I don't know how they're judging like the cost of producing these shows versus how many people are watching. And maybe they feel like this is an investment opportunity and it doesn't sort of matter if people are saying this show sucks because they have another season left in them.
They did make that investment, right? Because season one was like not a success at all. Right. And they kept going, and season two was a huge improvement, and it was like worth it. But they also waited a long time before they brought it back. Do you remember, like, I think Potomac also, like, even though Potomac was good ratings from the beginning, like
I was not on team Potomac season one.
No, but but ratings wise it did well. Like
it did better than Dallas. Yes.
I think that like they made that investment, and I would not be shocked if like Dallas was the first show to get canceled in a while, the way that like, you know, not since Miami, right? Like,
yeah.
I think that like we sort of have this weird mentality that like all housewife shows will just go on indefinitely. And I think at some point, like if Dallas like doesn't get any better this season and like people aren't into it and it's just like not, you know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't Bravo just say like, forget that, we could just produce like another Vanderpump Rules spinoff, or we can produce another, like do another city. Like,
and I don't want it to go. I just think we need to kick Carrie K off. We need to bring Carrie C back, and we need to relook. I keep forgetting who said this. I think it was Evan Ross Katz recently, which is like, either they need to stop bringing in people who appear to be on an assigned team already. And the Leanne Deandra stuff is done. Like, we're done. These women do not care about each other. What your comment, astute comment that you made earlier of like, if you go on the show, you're sacrificing all of your relationships, and you sort of have that understanding at this point. Right. Not to like mischaracterize what you said, but
I think what I was saying is you know, there are exceptions like Brandy and Stephanie. Yeah. They had a falling out, but they're fine now. That like this show does serious damage to like longstanding relationships.
It does. And I think these women, they're too late in the game of this franchise now to pretend that they didn't know that. And there was an inherent dynamic with Leanne and Deandra that's obviously continuing, because we've heard about like who's the queen of the whatever, aka who's the real star, where Deandra went on the show. And I think Deandra had a great first season and thought that that would continue forever and that she would just be seen as like America's sweetheart, which is not factually correct. And I think that Deandra came on the show, and because she knew that she had more money than Leanne and she had the society name, that she would come out on top, and that hasn't happened. And so we're watching the downfall of their relationship because of shit that's happened on the show, and also them fighting about their standing off. I find that fascinating, aka circle last season. This season I'm like, I'm done now. You guys don't like each other. It's stupid. Well,
I think the repetitiveness of it's like, it's sort of comical that we've had a party for Leanne's wedding in every episode.
Yeah.
But it really like kind of feels appropriate given how stale the season feels. That like, yeah, we literally have. We're seeing the same parties over and over and over again, and none of us care. And the fact that like God, the other drama that's driving me crazy is the Stephanie Cam stuff, because it's, what are they even fighting about? And like, I think that Cam is like, I know people like Cam and think she's underrated, but I find her to be insufferable. And
she's insufferable.
And I just like, she's smarter than she acts, for sure.
Totally.
But also like, you can't actually have a conversation with her. So when Stephanie's trying to like work it out with her, like it's like talking to a wall, where I'm like, I don't want to watch this. It's just frustrating.
I'm like,
Cam is just sitting there like, picking out whatever like slight she can find and then just like throwing it back. And I just like, it's not interesting to me.
I think, you know, Damien came on AG last week, OG of the AG, and said that he thought that Deandra was like one of the most insufferable housewives that he's ever watched on the show. And I was surprised by that. But I'm watching Cam's behavior this past episode. I felt rage, not only about what she's doing on screen, which is essentially on screen, which is like gaslighting Stephanie, but her behavior online I thought was inappropriate.
What did she do?
She's just been like, I'm sorry, and I'm just like too protective of Stephanie, but I think I have the right to be protective because she is an angel sent to us from heaven above and has done not a single thing that I find myself criticizing, aside from like not loving herself. I can't even get into that right now. Like, nobody's perfect, but she is as close as anyone will ever be. And Cam is just doing some, I'm sorry, but # systematic bullying of just attacking Stephanie repeatedly over and over and over again. She's only responding to viewers that are like, Cam's fan. And she's saying it over and over and over again. She brought up screenshots that she took of Stephanie's assistant taking photos of her and posting stuff on her social media the day that her bullshit 11 a.m. mother hosted couples shower for Leanne and Rich took place, and is saying, you could have been here, but you weren't. And Stephanie has said repeatedly online that the reason that at 11 a.m. she wasn't at a couples shower, noting that she had hosted one prior, so she could not be, I'm getting very hot and bothered because I am Team Stephanie. Anyway, Stephanie could not be more of a fucking friend to Leanne and everybody else on this motherfucking show, and she paid for the fucking previous shower that we saw on a week pass and has attended other things and is obviously a supportive friend to Leanne's upcoming like 18th wedding event, which happens to be her actual wedding. And Cam is like, well, because you weren't here at 11 a.m., you were lying to me, and I'm going to gaslight this and pretend that you're a bad person. And what Stephanie has said repeatedly on the show and online is, I had engagements for my children. I'm going to put my kids first. And Stephanie said online in tweets, she's like, I had to bring both of these kids to different schools, and I had an engagement for both of these kids, and I was sure technically sitting on my couch in sweats at 11 in the morning because she'd probably just gotten back from the school.
Right.
And getting into hair and makeup takes a little bit of time, and nobody should know that more than fucking Cameron Westcott. So if we're pretending that she thinks that Stephanie should have shown up in sweats and no makeup to her bullshit, gorgeous, I have to say that shower was stunning, devoid of any personality or character, I would fucking love that shit. Are you kidding? I would, to stand in front of that balloon step and repeat, Jimmy Westcott has terrific waspy taste. I genuinely, I'm not, the food looks great, could not, if Taylor Armstrong spent $50,000 on Kennedy's like fourth birthday, who knows how much fucking money went into that day, and I am appreciative of your old money cash. But for Cameron to say that shit online, and she's just spouting the same stuff over and over and over again, and then Cam does her thing of being like, well, I'm a great mom because she, I don't know, spends wonderful minutes with her kids. Like, whatever she decides to do as a parent is fine, but her gaslighting and pretending that Stephanie was doing something that was like evil or poor friendy toward Leanne is horseshit, and I will go to my grave saying that what Cam is doing is disgusting. And I do not for a second, I'm trying to kill a fly as I say this, look at me multitasking, is in no way like consistent with reality. Which is why, by the way, I'm appreciative that Cameron's giving us something, but I hate it.
Could you imagine if I disagreed with you? Like,
I would murder
like,
you.
I
would murder
but I'm
you right now.
Terrified right now.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. Thank you. Absolutely right. Thank I mean, so like, much. It's frustrating because, like, yeah, because it's like gaslighting, because it's just like they're not fighting about anything, you know? Like, Cam is just like the thing where, like, Stephanie was like saying, I want us to be more than surface level friends, and for Cam to be like, oh, so you thought I was a surface level friend. Like, it's just like, it's such a silly sort of like, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if Cam's trying to create drama for TV. I don't know if she's like,
I think she actually believes it.
I don't know what it is. Like, I think that she's just like,
she's a monster.
She's impossible. I don't know. I really like, I'm not, none of them are having good seasons.
And P.S. Cam is obviously watching the show as we all are and has known about Stephanie's very open and brave struggle with mental health. And I'm not saying that if you're angry at someone, you can't say it. But I am saying, like, it seems in the worst possible way for Cam as a person, she is picking like low hanging fruit in the sense that I feel like she is manipulating Stephanie specifically because she thinks that Stephanie is a beta and won't stand up for herself. And sweetie, you are picking the wrong fucking person because Stephanie is one of the greatest, kindest, bravest, most okay, angelic housewives right. that we have ever had. And it also feels like it's showing your true colors. She's never going to do this about Leanne because she doesn't think she's going to win against Leanne in a fight. I don't even think she would really do it against Deandra. Her picking this fight and repeatedly aggressing Stephanie to me says much more about Cameron's character than anyone else's. She's making a specific choice and it's disgusting.
There are people,
and I'm so glad she's on the show.
There are people who don't like Stephanie. I think that majority of people do because, like, what's not to like? And, like, she's very lovable. But I think that, like, there are people who kind of just group her with Brandy who don't like Brandy.
Yeah.
Who are like,
and there's some good critique there. There's some valid critique.
I think that it's easy if you are like a Brandy hater to kind of just like lump Stephanie in with that, even though, like, I think Stephanie, what was so frustrating about Cam acting like Stephanie was not a good friend is like when Cam and Brandy had that ridiculous fight over nothing with the napkin and her calling her trash and like in, you know, the fight in Mexico.
Yeah.
Like, Stephanie did not go after Brandy. She went over to Cam and was like, even though Cam was like behaving really fucking poor, like that she was so angry that like Brandy said effing in her face, as she loves to say. She threw a napkin at her and called her trash. I was like,
fuck you.
And then Stephanie went over to her.
Garbage.
And then Stephanie went over to Cam. So like this whole narrative that Cam has been a bad friend to her is silly.
Stephanie has been a bad friend to Cam.
Did Stephanie and Brandy suspicious of Cam to begin with? Yes, because Cam treated them like garbage because she acted like she was better than them. From the moment she arrived on the show, she thought she was like better than these people. And every time she calls Brandy trash, it reflects a very real belief that she is of a lower class, that she thinks that Brandy is of a lower class than she is. She has made this clear from the moment she started on the show. So I think it's really disingenuous for her to act like, I just showed up and tried to be part of your group and you guys like bullied me, when really what happened is Cam showed up and thought she was better than them and they reacted defensively, which is valid.
Cam's also one of those people who I just love to get angry at. Like, I love it. I'm so appreciative that she's on the show because she is such a horrible person and so rich and pretty and has such genuine, she is a genuine, legit, old money ranked position in Dallas society, which is a rarity to get someone like that on Housewives. And I am appreciative of it.
Yeah. Thank you for your service. I'm glad she's on the show. I think that like in the last episode, the last couple episodes, like part of the staleness I'm feeling with the show and like the frustration with the season, like that falls into like, or sort of Cam's behavior falls into that in the sense that like, it's not fun for me to watch her like, she can't have a conversation. They're not having an actual fight.
Totally.
She's just kind of like, she's not hearing anything. She's just saying whatever. She seems like she's a total space cadet. Like, that's not fun to watch. So like, I do like that she like can kind of play the villain.
Yeah.
But I'm not enjoying it as much this season because it just seems like it's so outside of reality.
I'm just laughing at myself because you're saying these things and I'm like, it's kind of like when I talk about Shannon. Where it's like sometimes, where there's sometimes like a love where it's like, there's no rhyme or reason for this.
No, you just like love this person.
I just love it. Okay, can I give you a satchel before we wrap? Because we need to talk about the most important part of any episode that Dallas has had so far this season, of any scene, which obviously concerns Mama D v. Deandra.
Right.
And I have two satchels of gold. One from Jess in...
Okay, because I do have thoughts about all of that, by the way.
Oh, I need to hear it. You're moving in. Okay, great. Satchel from Jess in Dallas. Ooh, Dallas. It's tough. Mama D raised a spoiled brat and hates her for it. Second satchel of gold from M in Sydney. It's obvious to everyone except Deandra that she needs to let go of her trust. I would not be surprised if Mama D hasn't blown it all already and unshackle herself from her mother. Mama D is a piece of work and Deandra has no doubt had a very dysfunctional childhood. This relationship is very disturbing.
It is. I do have to say, I think that Deandra's like money troubles on the show are some of the first in a long time on Housewives that feel real to me.
Completely nodding. And yes.
I think that people, you hear how much money she's talking about and it sounds like, and to those of us who don't earn nearly as much, it sounds crazy. But the truth is, like, when you have that much property and you have that much, the bills they're paying every month and all the shit that they have, like, Deandra is absolutely living beyond her means and her money concerns are very, very real.
Yeah.
And I think that like the failing company is absolutely dragging her down. And I also believe that like Mama D gave her the company for a reason. I think that like that is that like there was a sort of like you figure it out aspect to all of it. And I think that like that I'm not convinced it's like the whole sort of like competitive thing of wanting to like, you know, of like giving her the company so that she could watch it fail. But I do think that Mama D was like, this is a sinking ship. You can go ahead and take it now.
And I'm going to blame you when it ultimately sinks, because I'm going to money and savings shame you while also not revealing the fact that what you probably know to be true, you know, you don't have any money left in your trust,
right?
Because I spent it.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe that.
I think it is very strange, as someone who does not come from family money, that a woman that is 50 years old has declined the opportunity to access just the total amount in her trust. I am confused that because of some saying that her stepfather said to her mother back in the day before he died of like, don't let her whatever, that Deandra has decided that that means she shouldn't know the number, and has also decided that because her mother is the trustee, that means she can never really hold her to account, that she's always ultimately going to bury expressing herself. And surely Deandra knows that all is not well. If she was handed the keys to a company that she thought had more value or at least less debt than it does, what on fucking earth does she truly think about what is inside that amount, especially if she's only getting $5,000 a month from that? When she said the words $5,000, the gasp that came out of my body was heard in the Neiman Marcus in Dallas. Like,
right.
That is a staggeringly low number. And you look at other people who come from, like, Shep Rose heard $5,000 a month and he's like, you mean a day? Like, that
right.
is a right. very small amount of money, which doesn't mean well.
A lot of people who, like, watch these shows, it seems like that's plenty of money. But, like, when you are living the lifestyle that she is, that's nothing at all.
I don't think anybody looked at $5,000 a month thinking about how much money she spent. I remember she did like an inside my closet thing. I think it was for BravoTV.com or something, where it was like, she's like, this is a Valentino dress that was like $15,000 or $25,000. Right. Or maybe she did it on the show with her stepson. And she was like, oh, it's so crazy, I can't wear it again. Like, I hear someone's getting a check from $5,000 a month, noting that they're not really getting paid from work, or if they are, it's going to something else.
Well, she has a salary.
But like, how big is that salary?
She talked about it in the episode. I don't remember but it was like not, she was, what was she saying? I can't live on like whatever a year. It was like,
no, I think she was talking about the 60K a year, meaning 5K a month times 12.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think we ever heard. And then Mama, sorry, I'm all over the place, but there was a lot there to unpack. And Mama D being like, well, why can't you live on that? You're bad with money. And right. then DeAndre responding and being like, well, I had 9 million pairs of shoes when I was six months old.
I think that Mama D absolutely spoiled her and taught her to live this lifestyle, and like that is her responsibility. But I also believe that DeAndre is bad with money. Yeah. And I think that what Mama D was saying was like, is very true, and very true of like so many of us, regardless of how much money we have, which is that we spend what we can. So if you make more money, you spend more money. Like, and I think that like she's right in a sense that like if DeAndre suddenly like had more of an income, she would just spend that. I don't think that she's going to be saving that money.
And also, I have been joking for several weeks, like the horrible person that I am, that like DeAndre's poor, which spoiler alert, she is. I did not know that DeAndre didn't own her home. I did not know that either her mom owns her or
Candace.
Worse than Candace, because Candace is at least, I don't think that Candace is at least in a point in her career where her career sort of hasn't started yet.
Right.
DeAndre is at a point that she acknowledges where it's like she left a career that she had in DC to come home for whatever reason. It was ultimately her choice. And she's living in a property that doesn't belong to her. And P.S., do we know that it even belongs to the trust? Who knows how many mortgages have been assigned to that? You like, who knows who, if that house was bought in cash by the trust? Like, who knows, as you're saying, it takes a lot of money to afford being rich. And yeah. If Mama D, whatever happens, like who knows how much of the estate will, you know, need to, how many bills will need to, you know, go back to the estate to cover all this. She's not in a great spot, and her husband doesn't contribute at all to their income. I don't see this going in a positive direction for DeAndre to support herself in any way to a lifestyle that she has become accustomed to.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting also on these shows that we can't really talk about is like, you know, how much the show pays for.
It's such a good
point. We know that like, you know, what DeAndre's living off of more than like what she's making from her failing company is the salary she makes on this show. So like if I'm DeAndre, like I'm panicking about ratings because like, what will happen if the show goes away? Like there are so many of these housewives and we forget, you know, they get fired from the show, whatever, we kind of move on with our lives and don't remember, but their lifestyles are paid for so much by the show, you know? So like how are Gretchen and Slade living, for example, when like we know that Slade is in massive debt and will be for the rest of his life,
which is why they can't get married,
when Gretchen's income was primarily from the show. So like, yes, like it ends up being appearance fees basically, and like, you know, whatever bullshit you do as like a D-list celebrity to like make money, but like the salary they make from these shows is not insignificant.
And almost how much money do they have to invest? The Housewives of yesteryear is not the same as this year. We make fun of Gina on OC's glam, but like she is not a woman that has a lot of money who's going through a lot of stuff right now. And what do you do when you're cast on this show and you have to pay for like your 24/7 glam? There's a high cost of living, not to say that DeAndre didn't have that life before, but Jesus.
No, I thought about this a lot because I'm always like, what would I do in a reality show? Because I wear the same outfits so often because I just don't have that many nice clothes. And I'm always like, what would I do if I were being filmed and if I would be like made fun of for wearing the same thing more than once? Like, how would I do that? You know, there was that article about The Bachelor and about how much those women spend because they have to bring a certain number of dresses to. Like,
oh, my God.
I think it's like 10 different dresses. Mm. And so like some of them rent stuff and some of them are buying things and it's an investment. You're like investing in your reality career and spending tens of thousands of dollars that you don't have.
BCC Drag Race too.
In the hope that you will be able to make a career out of this and then like make it back. But like, yeah, there is like, you know, especially on Housewives Now, there is like an obligation to kind of like keep up with the Joneses. But at the same time, like, we know that like so many housewives who are fake rich like end up being undone by this because they like rent homes they can't afford and rent cars they can't afford because they want to look good on TV. And then it all comes crashing down because, surprise, there was fraud involved. Or because, like, they're now, you know, how many of them have, like, gone bankrupt or, like, had to, like, have been sued because they owe people money. Like, it's all because of, like, trying to keep up this image.
I'm going to need to go to physical therapy from the amount of nodding that I'm doing right now while Lewis is trying. Because that is exactly right. And obviously, the interesting thing to me with Deandra is it's the keeping up with the Joneses IRL, the way that she lived before the show, and also how being on the show has exacerbated or made worse her spending.
Well, I think that what's interesting about Dallas is that it's one of the only cities now that really has society in the same way.
In like, a real way.
There certainly is New York society, but those women are not on Housewives.
Ramona's dream in life is
right.
To be.
Like, though, yeah. Like, there are real New York society women, and they are not doing Real Housewives. And so, like, maybe at some point, the Countess would have been one of them, but at this point, she's a reality personality and cabaret star. So, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that there's whatever New York society exists, like, they're not part of it.
The only person that I would counter and say genuinely actually is, which we have made fun of her for saying Sonia. In the past, is Sonia, who had her photos yesterday from La Grenouille, I think it was, for right. a ladies' lunch with fucking Ivana Trump. I just forgot her name for a second. And Carol Asher of, like, the Asher Diamond.
Right.
These women who... I mean, Ivana Trump is probably not the best example, but everybody else in that group photo has bajillions of dollars.
What I'm saying is,
and
like,
Sonya's like the poor one.
I'm saying these names have like that they're now more about the reality show than they are about like
totally
like Carol Radziwill. Like, that is the Radziwill name is a real name.
Completely.
Like, I think that like De Lesseps is like, you know, a real name or
totally.
Was at one point, but they're not operating in New York society anymore. They're now just like Bravo celebrities.
Yeah.
And I think that Dallas, these women are very much like obsessed with like actual Dallas society. And that matters for them as much as like Cameron Westcott cares as much about like the Westcott name as she does about like being a Bravo celebrity, being a reality star.
And also not damaging that name and pissing off Jimmy.
Right.
I'm sure that's a huge part of this.
So it's different because, like, if the cameras were off, we know that Deandra would still be trying to, like, live up to her name in a way. Whereas, like, a lot of these shows, like, on OC or, like, Jersey or whatever, like, they're not spending this money because they're trying to keep up with, like, society. They're spending this money because they're trying to keep up with like their reality persona. I think that Dallas is exceptional in that way, in that Deandra's spending, as you're saying, is as much about like her IRL life and trying to like not fall out of Dallas society.
Such a good point. So well said. And what's interesting to me, you know, I sometimes fall behind in watch What Happens. So I try to binge as many of the like Housewife specific eps as I can before recording. And I was watching the one that Deandra had with, Jenna Dewan, who I guess watches Dallas. She was adorable. But during the show, or was it on the after show? No, I think it was during the show, Mama D called in. And she does her whole, like, I could give a rip of, like, what other people think of me. It's just so interesting that there is not an actual ounce of a moment of contemplation or, like, real acknowledgement of how she's behaving toward her daughter on the TV show. And she's driving straight, like, head first, diving straight into, I am a TV star and I think it's adorable. And also, I don't regret anything that I've said about her daughter. And, like, one of the worst things I've ever heard a parent say on Housewives was this week. Right. It wasn't in the teaser for the season. I think it happened on this week's episode when she's like, the best thing my daughter does is ask for money.
Right.
Which. Ow.
Right,
like that
right.
is
no,
rough
it's dark,
tough stuff.
It's dark. It's dark.
It's so dark. But also like I found this scene illuminating in the scene for next week where they go to lunch and Jeremy's asking his mom-in-law if she has any regrets. And she's like, I don't, like, pass the mimosas. I mean, it's this is like a real crazy fucked up relationship that we're seeing, and watching the influence of housewifery play out in that dynamic is fascinating.
Right. Mama D is so interesting to me because she definitely loves being on TV and loves is like it. Into the being a TV personality, but there is like genuine darkness there and like, yes. and trauma in a way that like, whereas I've complained about other moms on these shows who like are too into being on TV and like, I don't know what the distinction is, but Mama D is just better TV. Like her relationship with Deandra is like good TV.
She's Mama Elsian in the way that she comes in as such a totally different person and personality than what we've ever seen before, and is also deeply and honestly herself.
Right.
And it's something that I think other moms get confused by, like Dr. Deb probably thinks right. I'm the first mom to have rainbow colored like hair or whatever, so I'm uniquely me, but it comes off as false because I think Dr. Deb at her core is a false fake person. And I think that Mama D, regardless of how you think about her, this is like real Mama D. She is a showstopper, she's a personality, and probably right. always has been, and a name in society because of her husband's family.
This reminds me that we totally left out Tinsley and talking about society people on New York, so, which is unfair to Tinsley because Tinsley Mortimer was an actual society
swan
person. But Dale is like a good example of someone else who like is very much herself, but also like loves being on camera and is like a personality
and
but,
is really good at it,
but has a legitimately fraught relationship with her daughter based on like not understanding her needs and treating her like, you know.
But at least with Dale, I look at Dale and I'm like, at least I can see the love there, where it's not totally, just a competition.
Yeah.
Feels like Mama D is competing with Deandra.
Mama D has moments where you can tell that she cares about Deandra. But I think that, you know, she's definitely more withholding.
And God bless her for it. What an episode. Louis Peitzman, there's a fly flying around in my living room right now because I think it's just so happy to be a fly on the wall of this conversation. Look at what I did there. OMG. Louis Peitzman, tell the people where to follow you online, where they can join just some of your casual Twitter friends like, oh, I don't know, Christine Teigen.
You can follow me on Twitter at Louis Peitzman. You can subscribe to my newsletter.
Hi, drama.
LouisPeitzman.substack.com. And yeah,
this was such a joy. I am so glad that you were on the People's
Couch. Every time we're going to say we're going to do a short episode, we do not do that.
I said to Louis Weitzman before recording, I was like, this is going to be short because I need to take a walk. And it was not even a little bit short.
And it's 9 p.m. now. It's too late to walk.
It is 2020, you guys. You won't believe what happened with that election. I would tell you, but we've run out of time. This was such a joy. Guys, if you haven't purchased Andy's Girls merch, holy fucking shit, what is wrong with you? The store is open. Slide in there and buy yourself a tee. Great for the holiday season. Terrific to wear at BravoCon. Halloween's coming up. Who's dressing as me?
This is Andy's Girls merch by Aileen 2.
It is Andy's Girls merch by Aileen 2. But unlike Aileen 2, the store remains open for biz. Guys, if you don't follow me on Twitter, Instagram, which 99% of you do not, what are you waiting for? Twitter at Sarah Galley, Instagram at Dame Galley. Louis Peitzman, we got a little political this week, which
we did. I'm sure we'll get angry tweets, but you can't not. I mean, sometimes you have to.
I'm
willing to have this discussion. I will exchange like two tweets with you if you want to yell at me, and then I will mute you.
Oh, I thought you meant me specifically. No, I will yell at you about Cameron Westcott. I will yell at you for days.
That's fine. Even though we agree, you can keep yelling.
Make America Stephanie again is all absolutely. I have to say.
Love and kindness.
Amen. Love and light. Oh my God.
Stay in the positive.
Stay in the whatever. Louis, this was a total pleasure. Need to have you back ASAP, especially because Jersey and Atlanta are coming.
I can't wait.
I can't.
Save us.
So
save us from Dallas.
Save us from Dallas. Mama D, slide into my Venmo. Thank you so much. and guys, we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.